pretty much more in the context of historical of how we got to where we are, and then you can decide where we are legally from there. I'm not an attorney. I'm just a guy that thought that we could do something out here and use different different tools to try to make this happen. So, I guess maybe we could just start off. I'm not going to answer every. I like to answer the questions in the storyline. In other words, I'm going to do a historical of how we got to where we are. But maybe I could answer different questions along the way. So maybe just open up with a 5 minutes. Or so minutes of asking questions, and then I'll try to answer them all during my little discussion. Yeah.
Come here.
No questions.
Oh, you want us to ask questions?
Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah, fire off questions that you have, and like say I won't answer them individually, but I'll try to weave it in there somewhere and answer it, if that's okay.
Okay, well, one of the questions, and I'm a New Orleans Chamber of Choir. We're not even in the
access up that street, that there was no permanence to it. The next mayor or the next city council would be able to revoke that, and there would be, the gate would be no longer able to be used. That first part of the land that we developed, we'd sold off about 15 lots. So we had a good working relationship with various real estate agents. And they said, Rick, and Steve, my son, you guys ought to consider going to a condominium regime. And I was very reluctant to do so just because there would be it'd be a lot more work on our end to get it set up. But they, after having various conversations, it was like, well, they would be value added in order, you'd have a different product out there than the Lomas of Centenario, which is all public streets. And you might be able to recoup your investment in order to do that to set up the condominium regime by being able to have some value added to the property and be able to charge a little bit more. So we looked at those possibility. By then it's like, well, shoot, if we're going to do a condominium regime down there, it's just as easy just to do a larger piece and be able to shed those costs amongst more land. This was in 2006, and we started talking to the owner of the property here, the Polancos, and one thing led to another, and we committed to buy and to create one, a condominium regime all the way to what we know of now, the Hacienda Palo Verde. There's going to be many steps to jump through all the hoops. We went to the municipality, got their spreadsheet or their sheet of all the steps of the environmental impact of the rezoning of the land. There was just a lot of steps that we were going to jump through, and really we weren't going to be able to sell any land. That was 2000. By then it was starting to be 2007. But it's like, well, we need to shut down the sales because we can't sell something that, we still don't have the legality of the condominium regime. So, it took us a year of working full time, my son and myself and architect and other, hired help. Not having done this before, but by then we'd established a good relationship with Jose Luis Gaitan, attorney here in La Paz that's well respected. Probably he would certainly be at the top of the list for many people of being experienced in real estate matters, especially concerning foreigners buying through fideicomisos, and that he built a business along those lines. For this, let's hit the pause button on what we were doing. I'd like to go back and talk about condominium law and how it came about to what we have today in Baja South. And some of this I know for fact, because I was, 2004 and on, I was aware, and we were complying with all the way up till now. The last revision is 2016. Before the 1970s in Baja, there were no condominiums. Everybody just had a house. By the mid late 1960s in Mexico City, they started doing low income housing, where the developers could figure they could make cheaper houses or structure. Residents for people if they built vertically. So they started building, four-story, three-story, no elevator type structure, low-income housing. And there was, it's like, we don't have, how are we going to regulate this? So they came up with really the first laws of condominium regime in Mexico, or Mexico City. And then, some years later, here in La Paz, El Pedregal, not to be confused with the tourism homes, the big homes up on the hill, there was another, Pedregal, along with numerous other, started using that model to sell low-income housing. So these bylaws were made. And a lot of that DNA of those laws remain to this day. They've slowly been modifying, improving them, if you will. But certainly embedded in those laws was how do we separate the dues, and how do we vote? And somebody came up with a bright idea, and it kind of made sense in the low income housing situation. If there was a 2-bedroom unit, and this is just as an example, they would have the equivalent of 1 vote or 1% of the dues. If they had a 3-bedroom, well, it's a bigger, and this is goes to, they had common water and other expenses, and they said, well, the 3-bedroom should pay more than the 2-bedroom. So then they said, well, maybe they pay 1.2 percent, and maybe if it's a 1-bedroom little apartment, maybe they would pay 0.8. So that became known as indivisos. The indiviso is a undividable. So here, the land that we're sitting on right now, the clubhouse, is part, we are each part owners of it. It's not dividable. That's why they call it, it's undividable. But for the reason of titling, they said you must determine the indiviso, the undividable portion, even though it's kind of oxymoron, right? It doesn't make, but it kind of makes sense in that situation that if you had a 3-bedroom, you were going to pay more than a 1-bedroom. So along those lines, it's like, okay, if you're going to have a 3-bedroom, the 3-bedroom better pay, not only are they paying more, but they're also going to get a bigger vote. If they're paying more dues, they get a bigger vote. So embedded in that law that we were having, that's it talked about the indivisos in our condominium regime. Each one of you, by being an owner of a lot, have a certain percentage of the undividable. The only place it's really used is in the context of, and the only practical use of it is in the context of how your voting goes and what percentage of your dues you pay. The very first development that was not, in that low income situation where the developers, all they want to do is develop the land and here, here homeowners, knock yourself out. Here are the rules. You guys figure it out. In the rules, there is nowhere that it establishes it talks about an administrator and it talks about funding, but it doesn't talk about where those funds go. So it's saying, yes, you gotta pay your bills, but there is no set way for those bills to be paid. It's not a legal entity. the first development of a tourism residential was Pedregal in Los Cabos, and by the Rivera family, very powerful, you know, politically powerful, whatever, economically same. And they started going through these bylaws and says, this doesn't work. You know, we have all these lots over here. Each one of them is different. And guy, you know, this might work fine for your low income situation, but for us, it's not going to work. We need to make our own bylaws. Talked to the Congress of Baja California South, and they made a little carve out for them. We start getting informed, and I start looking at these, at the rules. It's like, how, you know, these rules, I mean, we have 106 lots in Hacienda de Palo Verde. There isn't a two lots that are similar, that are exactly the same size. So if we're going to go to the indivisos, and it talked about it at that time of the indiviso was your voting, and the indiviso percentage was your dues. It's like, oh man, that's going to take forever to calculate. Every time we vote, it's like, you know, Bob Vargo, he might have, you know, 1.13 percent, and Debbie, you might be 0.77. It's like, how, you know, when we go to vote, it's like, man, this is going to be a long process. And by then, I was talking to Gaitan and the notary. It's like, shoot, we have 106 home sites. And to split the dues 106 different ways and the votes 106 different ways is, oh, hold on, right here in this clause, tourist residential is like, okay, well, that's an interesting clause. There was many other condominium regimes that stipulates in there, from low income housing to residential to storage to industrial, all these different kinds, they all had to comply with that regulation, except for tourist residential. And then we had this big carve out. It's like, it says in there, you can basically make your own reservations for the duration, and you are autonomous and independent. And it's like, wow, did I read that right? And I'd go back and say, hey, how about can we just make it one lot, one vote, one dues? He says, yeah, you make your own regulations. And okay, that's cool. And can we just put in there, you know, it talks about you will have one annual meeting, at least one annual meeting. And I says, can we go ahead and embed in there when it's going to be so that we all know, you know, years in advance when we're going to have it? So yes, you make your own rules. Like, fine, okay, most of the people that we think we're going to sell to are probably going to be foreigners. You're probably going to be down here most of the winter, come down in the fall, but then we're going to get busy with the holidays. And it's like, why don't we pick Saturday, the last Saturday of January? It's like, makes sense to me. So we put it the last day of Saturday. And it's like, well, if we knew that, we need a fiscal year. How are we gonna, you know, we can't make it to January 1st because we're having the meeting after we've already started the year. Let's make a fiscal year, March 1st through
April 1st,
thank you. And March 31st, April 1st through March 31st. We can do that. A few changes like that. And then it's like, you know, how about all these rules? It's like, we had established good contacts with different people, and we had the regulation of Pedregal. We had Jose Luis Gaitan, the attorney, was the president of the association of La Concha condominium regime. And he says, hey, look, here, take these. So we had, you know, three or four different regulations, and we started trying to fine tune them to what would work for us. And in the rules of Baja California South, it talks about you need 75% of the owners to approve a change. And it's like, man, that's going to be a tall mountain to climb. If we ever want to change our bylaws, we're going to have to, you know, to get 75% of the owners to agree on something is, yeah, that's a good idea, but is it, in practicality, is it ever going to happen? That's going to be tough. Why don't we make it so it's 75% of the quorum, which is also a little bit dangerous because you could have a small group really deciding for a lot of others. So it's like, okay, let's go ahead and do that. We'll try to get, you know, it's already, everybody knows the last Saturday of January is the HOA meeting. Any changes, you better be well represented because whoever shows up there is capable of changing the bylaws. So that's going to the notary. You know, before that, before all, we finally finalized our rules, and we showed them to, you know, we refined that with Gaetan, and I spent tens of thousands of dollars of legal fees with him, and then tens of thousands of dollars of fees, legal fees with the notary, working through our way through this process, a year-long process of working it every day.
So this is 2007, right?
2007, yes. By the time it's all done, 2008 had rolled around. So 2008, the updated rules of Baja California Salad had come out. They basically changed one thing besides cleaning up the verbiage. The rules that were in 2004 rules talked about the monetary drawing a blank here. When you're late payment,
the penalties.
Thank you. The penalties had been set in pesos. The 2008 rules had started this new thing called UMAS.
¿Cómo se llama?
UMAS. UMAS. It stands. It was a unit. Explica.
Unidad monetaria.
Monetaria. It was very similar to the minimum wage, but it was something that was established. That instead of every rule every few years having to be updated because inflation had taken off, instead of embedding the peso amount in there, they said, the first penalty is one UMA, and the second penalty is two UMAs, and so forth. And so embedded in all Mexican law. And during that time was a phase over to the UMAS for fees, for penalties, and that sort of thing. It was the first time I had seen it. And it's like, oh man, you know, every time we're going to do a penalty, we got to go back to the official registry and find out what the UMA is for this year and get the calculator out. I wish, probably because, you know, inflation is eating us up too with our different aspects of our penalties. I wish I would have just put it in there, put it in UMAS, you know, and then that would keep up with inflation. Our penalty system is in pesos, therefore it needs to be updated, you know, in pesos, or we can change over some if we so decide to UMAS. But those are some of the changes that we took the liberty to do, really with the spirit of the whole time. Is like, my entire career was with a lot of rules and regulations and stipulations and shall nots and do's and may's, and it's like, you know what, I just want to come here and create something that I've lived peacefully with my neighbors. Now that we have in our own bylaws, let's make some really basic things like, you know, not loud noises, not too many junky cars in the yard, keeping it at the very basic. And if we wanted to change it, we had the means of changing it within our own bylaws. So that was the spirit that was all created. Our bylaws then, before they were even sent to the notary, we took them to the municipality, to Asuntamientos Humanos, and I had them go through it, and they approved it, stamped it, we got all the stamps. And then I took that when the notary was ready to bring it all together and create the document, the constitution of the condominium regime. For this, it's like, Gaetan. The rules of Baja California South, you know, they establish different things, but you can't get there from here. In other words, we collect dues. Do we keep it all in a cash box and then pay it out from there? It's, no, not really. You know, I knew the answer. It's like you have a homeowners association, asociación civil, a legal entity. The condominium regime in itself is not a legal entity. It's a document that exists of how we are, but it's not a legal entity into itself. So he said, you have to create, and I will help you. And Jose Luis Gaitan was the first president of this association. I will create an association. Before you sell any land, you as a developer and me as the head of this civil association, and when it was created, it owned zero, and had zero money. We will join together. We will have a joint meeting where the civil association accepts, you know, that one lot in Palo Verde is tied together. Legally, they are part of the homeowner association, whether they like it or not. And I did, as part of the developer, I accept the homeowner association to represent the homeowners in these matters. That's pretty much the way it went. I know there's been questions here lately, so it's like, okay, well, let me look at this. And looking with the attorney, says, yeah, he initially had not seen that clause in there. You know, he reads a lot of law, but he wasn't looking specifically initially at that very clause. And said, oh yeah, that's interesting. That's the only clause in the whole bylaw that makes you, well, allows you to do whatever you want. He says, yeah, that's it. And says, well, what's the basis of all this? And then we went into, you know, what it didn't stipulate the law then, what was a tourism residential. And now it does. And, it, you know, we qualified for it then and we qualify for it today. Today, it talks about, I think, 950,000 of these umas, which ends up being, and then I subdivided it out per lot, $41,000. And that includes the land, the infrastructure, and the construction. So we exceed that by a multitude, multiple. The law says, or the other, if it is determined to be of substantial economic benefit to the municipality and to the community. So that word of tourism stuck out at me. It's like, well, what's a tourist anyway? A lot of us have different immigrant statuses here in Baja. Are we a tourist or what are we? So today I went down to the tourism office of Baja South. I talked to the director of Baja South, last name of Rufo. Kind of explain, hey, what's a tourist? Well, there's different definitions, but in the broad terms, it is somebody that's a foreigner that is bringing money from outside. In other words, they're not working here, and generally that they report those taxes in their home country. If you are a naturalized citizen or working down here, you're no longer an immigrant and no longer a tourist. But for the most part, you know. And then I said, well, it's just why do you ask? And I said, well, I developed some land out in Centenario, and we're trying to just, you know, prod our way through, verifying that we are still a residential tourism development. And she asked, well, what development's that? And I said, Haciendas Palo Verde. I said, oh, I'm very familiar with it. You know, she gave the name, a neighbor not too far from my house. This is I've been in there many times, and it's a beautiful development. And from what I understand, you know, the people live in there. Yes, they are tourists because they've come down here to spend money that they acquired somewhere else and enjoy, whether they're, so anyway. That's the tourism part. I went to Gaitan again and said, hey, where are we on this? And I said, we've done two developments ourselves, the Salvatierra, some of you might be familiar with, and they're doing another development. Same thing, residential tourism. That's and they're making, and she showed me the constitution of their condominium regime, very similar to ours. In there is embedded the rules and regulations and how they will operate. So I went to the notary, and I was like, hey, you know, here's what you wrote 15 years ago. You know, what's the validity of all this? Has anything changed? Here's the rules. And he says, and he, you know, we spent a half hour leafing through the key sections over there, and says, you know what? That's it. If I was doing it today again, that's what it would look like. You know, words change. Things get added, things get removed, but it would be that what you have. So that's, you know, I don't pretend to know everything. I think and I hope I go and talk to the right people when I have a doubt. And
can I ask you a question?
Of course.
So it sounds to me we have two legal bodies. One is called the regime,
mm-hmm.
and the other one is called the homeowner association, right?
They were created two different ones. They were married.
Civil
okay?
association.
They were married. So that the developer, that was me, accepted the homeowner association to represent and to be one entity. What there was, it's like reading the rules, you know, the they never talk about a homeowner association. They don't have to. They made the rules, you know, but it gives no vehicle in order to create a legal entity for us to be able to open a bank account to defend ourselves. That is the Asociación Civil, and they're married. The owner of all 106 lots, which happened to be me and my son, through Promotora Palo Verde, we accepted that they would be one and the same as far as the representation, so that we wouldn't have two boards. It doesn't make any. I maybe I'm too stupid, but I don't know why we need two boards when we can just have one board and be clean with it and be done with it.
They didn't have a board,
so,
though, do they?
That was my thinking, and that's the way these other developments work. It's like they have one board.
Yeah, because I'm a little bit trained in legal. So when I hear legal entity or I hear organization, they have certain laws like the regime law, and then they have the civil association mm-hmm. law, and they apply to those.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe that in 2016, the laws were changed here in a way that they can be married since 2016.
Yeah, they were married back in 2008, July 5th of 2008.
So you're talking about this system.
Nope.
You talk about when you started out,
nope.
Three, yeah, and then you married two of them?
I had no part, you know, legally, financially I did, of the association. Jose Luis Gaitan was the president, Esteban Sanchez was the secretary, I believe, and Jorge Ibarra was the treasurer. Those were all joined at our very first meeting. As soon as we had the document back from the catastro, the registry, that's the first thing we did before we sold any lots. It's like, hey.
Is there a marriage certificate or something?
It basically is, yeah. It basically is.
What vehicle did you use to marry them?
It was the minutes of a joint meeting. We had a legal joint meeting.
And when was that?
I want to say July of 2008. And that's been respected by, that was registered, that was, it's been respected by every legal entity that we've done.
I have a question. So when you started, you had a board, and there was, Jose Gaitan was the president,
mm-hmm.
and Ibarra was the treasurer,
yes.
and Esteban Sanchez was, yeah, and so you had a board.
The board was the board, I had never designated.
You called yourself the board.
In the acta constitutiva of the association, of the development, okay, it already had that there was going to be, and that's when they were named. They were named joint, it's the same.
Understand.
But, yeah.
But now I've been told that you don't have a board here anymore.
Of course we do.
He told us we didn't have a board, that we only had a vigilancy committee.
The oversight committee, It's not a
I know what an oversight that committee is. The oversight committee looks after the administrator.
It is the board. You can call it whatever you want. If it quacks like a duck and looks like a duck and smells like a duck, you know, even though it might not have a duck name on it, it's probably a duck. It's along those lines. It says so right in our bylaws, okay? So the bylaws are registered. That is how we operate.
I'm surprised that I get the impression at the moment that you put the bylaws, our Palo Verde bylaws, above the state laws.
Nope. And I'm not here to argue. I'll here to point out what I think. But if you don't agree, you probably need to go do something else that does not involve me directly conversing. I am pretty well convinced. I'm going to read. I'll read it in Spanish, and then I do have just a Google Translate of it. Ah, sí, pero aquí ya lo tengo.
Where is that Turista? What do you call it, Turista Residential? In the law.
In the law. I'm going to read it right here. Okay. So I believe you can, if you dig down deep enough in the, you can find the law of Baja California South. If you look for it online directly.
Is that an article or number or something?
Yeah, I'll get it to you.
Okay.
But this is all available online. It's, let's see here. It's page 7, if you download it. Article 5, Article 4, it talks, well, the page before that talks about industrial, commercial, of office, of mixed, of various different types of condominium regimes. And then 4, it says turístico residencial. I'm just going to try to find it in English now, because we're all talking English. I accept what Google will say about it. But of course, the legal is the Spanish. Tourist residential. Modality, is that a word?
Modality.
Adopted by the incorporator, that's me, by means of which he reserves the right to determine the organization, administration, operation, modification of the condominium property regime, and this is the most important, in an autonomous and unchangeable manner during the entire time established by the articles of incorporation. We don't have a dead set time, and it's whenever 75% of members decide they don't want a condominium regime. So there's no drop dead time. It's in the terms and provisions in Chapter 2, Title 5 of this law. It gives more things of what should be or what can be. So it's very specific. If you're really curious about this and look at all the other ones, there isn't any other condominium regime of any of these other types that allow this. That was put in there. Thank you to Pedregal in Cabo San Lucas, the most exclusive homes in Baja. Mm-hmm. Developed. And many others since then. There's a number of them here. And that's why our condominium bylaws may not look like who knows what other condominium. Because why? Because we get to make our own bylaws. It says here, autonomous and unchangeable manner during the entire time. So it's like
basically in perpetuity.
You guys figure it out. It's like, you know, your tourist development, you want special rules? Fine, knock yourselves out. You guys got to live by them. That's what we live on.
So then my question that I come back to is, they are actually not two separate entities, like the regime and the civil association. They are all one.
You are all one.
And then the bylaws are attached to this one, or are they attached to the part of it like the regime? They're attached to the one.
They're attached to both.
To both. Okay.
Yeah, it's because they're one and the same. The mm-hmm. bylaws were embedded, and I didn't bring all the paperwork, and I don't. But in our this is a copy of the Constitution of the development. This is, has nothing to do with HOA. This is just the land and the common areas and how all that works. And in here, you know, there's going to be the indivisos, but also in here is our regulations, the ones that we live by today. Mm-hmm. We have, you know, this is version one. Then we went to
remember the numbering.
Version three.
But did we just go 1, 2, 3? I don't remember if there was a point
was,
in there.
Yeah, it was 1, 2, 2.1, and 3.
Okay.
Yeah, we have.
Okay.
So we are at number three, not
yes.
number two,
yeah,
because
I
had number
are,
two
we
before.
Are three.
Okay.
So that was embedded in here before I took it to the notary. It's Dirección de Asentamientos Humanos what's a good translation? of communities of settlements, human settlements is really the, you know, they accepted it, they approved it before we married it to this acta constitutiva, and then we took it to the notary and he stamped it, approved it, and then from there, obras públicas and catastro registered it all. So that's kind of the rules we live by. We can change them. You know, let's have a meeting, and 75% of who's there. You know, if we're a legal registered. What's that?
They're registered under Hacienda Palo Verde.
Mm-hmm.
Over there.
Yeah.
Curious.
Yeah. Yeah. Question?
Yeah, so I thought before
you expanded
that there are certain offices connected with certain organizations. So a regime has a surveillance board, right?
Oversight committee. I like to call it an oversight committee, but
right.
Yes.
And then the homeowners association, similar to like in the U.S., has a president and has a treasurer. And so I thought, since we have those, and I never was clear how do they exactly work, should we have the surveillance committee and then the officers of the HOA? Or?
I'd have to ask why.
Because we have two organizations.
No, there's one organization.
Okay.
Absolutely one organization. And by the way, Promotora Palo Verde, the company that developed this, owns zero land here anymore. It's completely sold out. Mm-hmm. So they're no longer a player.
Right.
So yeah, you're it. You know, the HOA, that is it. That is it. They have the legal power to do whatever the HOA decides, but it's just one body.
So when the marriage occurred,
uh-huh.
the necessity to have a surveillance committee and to have a HOA board diminished were just gone.
Oh, it is one and the same. There
I
never was a separation.
Never required, is what
they
I
were never agree. They were never required. I established the rules that we just have one.
Okay.
Yep. There was never two.
Okay.
Yeah.
And as Ricardo Bayer says, you as a homeowner has a right to change it, but you need that 75% to change it. And
right.
it will be your decision. It's not an imposition. You need to decide. Most of the people, we can follow that.
75% of the people present at that particular meeting.
Of the members. Of the owners.
No, we
different.
Live by our own bylaws.
Oh,
it is by, you know, for better or for worse, for better or for worse, it is 75%. So please, if there ever is a duly, you know, a meeting established, please make sure you're represented one way or another, because things can happen if we're not well represented. That's the only caveat. Otherwise, you know what? If we would have established that by the you know, follow the same rules at the Baja California South, that might work in a low-income housing where everybody lives there and everybody's going to be right there. In this community, good luck on that. After the first year or two,
yeah,
it was very hard to have 75% even show up.
Yeah.
And then to get 100%, you know, to get 70, to get 100% of those to all agree on, it's like, you know, and sometimes we did. We had, and Chuck was there. Chuck's been there from the beginning. So, you know, this conversation that we're having now, and Chuck knows, you know, we had this very similar conversation probably 7-8 years ago. You know, it's like, yeah, you guys don't know what you're doing. You know, it's like, okay, knock yourself out. All the attorneys, our attorneys, and others, like, I'm not sure what they're talking about, but knock yourself out. And they Chuck remembers that.
Rick, and is it right when I consume that the regime laws don't apply to us?
Absolutely, they do.
No, only yes, our bylaws apply to
no,
us.
No, no, sir. No, sir.
The regime laws are out.
No, 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 no. The regime laws are 100% effect. They are above us.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So what happens when our bylaws conflict with the regime laws?
No, they
laws?
Don't. No, it says if there, we are, what's the verbiage? The stuff I just read. We can make our own bylaws. That's a carve-out that we have very specific to our kind of development. If we were low-income housing, if this was commercial property,
everything's wrapped around the tourist.
Everything is wrapped around the tourist. Mm-hmm. Everything is wrapped around the tourist, and the director of tourism agrees that we are a tourism residential. Our attorney does, you know, Gaitan does, our notary does. The municipality has accepted us as this kind of development. So I don't know where there's a question.
So you could create a bylaw that's in conflict with...
There is no conflict, because that gives us complete autonomy.
Okay.
The word is autonomy.
But then the question that Rainer had, what's overriding here? And you said that public law overrides us if we create a bylaw that conflicts with the public law.
We do not. We do not, because we comply with that clause. Thank you very much, Familia Rivera from Los Cabos, Pedregal, had them put in there. It says if you are a tourist residential area, you can basically do whatever you want. You obviously have enough money to spend. You know, you want to do it a certain way, knock yourself out. You get your lawyers, write something up, and buyer beware. I hope everybody's done their due diligence before moving in here. It's like, how does it operate? Well, it's very clear. Those bylaws are available online. They're your real estate agent should advise you.
Nope.
I don't know. I've learned that all they really care about is
money.
But they are on the website.
They are on the website.
Yeah, you couldn't find them on the website.
If you ask me, I will tell you. If you ask Scotty,
it's not on the website.
I couldn't find them on the website. Yeah.
Up about whether the regime law is above the bylaws, etc. So my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong from your understanding on this, is the regime law itself has a carve-out because of this family with the Pedregal in Las Cabas.
100%.
So it is part of the regime law that gives that carve-out, which then allows our bylaws to exist.
To do whatever we want.
Okay.
Wow.
That's it. So it's impossible to create bylaws that conflict with the regime law, because the regime law
allows you to conflict.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay. So it's impossible. We can't even break the law with our bylaws.
Well, as long as there's a carve out there. The carve out's been there in 2004 and still in there almost verbatim.
Okay.
2016 was the last revision. But it's just been word change. You know, it's been evolving. It's actually
federal law. So, no, there's a limit on
it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, you know, if people are really unhappy living in this community, then there's an easy answer. Just move out.
Well, I don't think people are unhappy.
They have been here and have been with the way things are running.
But Debbie, you don't like people asking questions.
I didn't say that at all.
Yeah. But it sounded like it. Because I didn't understand why you were saying what you were saying otherwise.
It doesn't matter.
Okay, then we forget about that comment. Thank you.
It's a little
There's
bit of
a
conflict.
Between being unhappy and
you don't like it,
being legal to protect your interests.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's why questions get answered.
I have no problem with that. That's fine. Let's ask some questions. I feel like I've done my due diligence by what I did and what we did, my son and I, did in 2006, 7 and 8 to establish this. I feel comfortable, you know, I feel comfortable going back in the last week, talking to the notary, talking to our attorney, talking to the director of tourism, talking to Sandra Gaitan. Luis Gaitan was on the golf course probably. But I feel, you know, but who am I? I established it. I'm a homeowner. I'm right along with you. You know, if we can better our rules by having 75% of the vote, change it to whatever. As long as we have that, I've never, and Chuck is my witness, I've never gone against the majority of the membership. Never. Never.
Is there a way to lose the tourist status? Like if you sold X amount of things to Mexican nationals?
I don't know. It's established. I mean, it's it was that's what the thought was. We did not limit it to foreign nationals at all. But
your definition of what a tourist is.
It's not predominant, but it's the same thing as more than what is it? Preponderance. It has the word preponderance. The preponderance more than half.
Yeah. You're comfortable with that. There's no way they could take it away.
Oh no, no. What are they going to take away?
What reestablishes it and where the regime law
becomes? I've never. I would find very little motive for anybody, you know, for who to do that. And really, it's going to be really quite regressive because, you know what, whatever rules have been established by then, forget about ever changing anything. All we're going to do is agree on who the administrator is going to be. We're going to agree on the budget and good luck on changing anything because you'll never... I'm pretty sure you're never going to be able to change any bylaws. Right now, we can. If somebody comes up with a good idea, and that's a whole other discussion of how do we, you know, right now there's 50 some ideas. It's like, yeah, some ideas are good. I'm not ready to listen to, you know, or listen to, but that's a whole other discussion.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you.
If I can say something about that?
Yes.
Jane here is part of the Architectural Review Committee, and we read the 51 proposals. One of them was just question because it has question marks in them. So I think the formal way to submit proposals is, okay, I'm not agree in this article, so you can write the article that you are not agreed, and below that, which is your proposal to change that? Because we received the 51, but most of the proposals was not enough information.
Yeah.
Because maybe I'm thinking something, but Jane is thinking other things.
And I think we agreed that we read the proposals, but the person who put the proposal in, we would have appreciated if they could suggest a solution to the proposal. And that was where we were rubbing our head. Well, what do we do? Where's the answer? What do these people want? I think that's what you mean. Yeah.
I'm not trying to eliminate.
No.
I'm just trying to explain.
Yes. What is the solution? Yeah.
We will be having another meeting because this needs more time to have the work that we want to have in the design guidelines and the bylaws to just have these problems to misunderstanding between.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So we need time to do that. Yes.
Just a quick question. Like when we're putting in a proposal, none of us are, you know, super proficient in Mexican law. So when we're putting together, and as you're saying, putting the proposal and putting in the article we're
change
not in
this,
agreement with, and then putting
this
in the proposal, and I did this in one that I put forward this summer, but the thing is I'm not cognizant of all the bits and pieces of Mexican law. So when we're going and putting this after a meeting, are we then putting things out to lawyers to make sure that things are put in properly?
Probably be better for it. Sorry. It really would be good to create a democratic way to present proposals that we are willing to all listen to and work our way through. You know, 52 is probably quite a bit. I don't know if there's a way, you know, maybe we create a format like you're talking about. Create a format and maybe just throw it out. There's nothing wrong. We cannot vote by email. We cannot vote. It's in the laws of Baja California South. It even was in 2004. But it's very, you got to go with a third party with hire a third party voting that devotes themselves to this and sign odds. And so we put it in our bylaws. You know what? Let's just vote in person. If you're not going to be there, find somebody else that's like-minded, have them vote for you. And that's one of the things I suppose could be changed if we so decide. But anyway,
you can change it.
If we create a democratic way, it's like, you know what, here's the 50. what's your top five? Let's can we agree what we want to talk about five at a time, five in a meeting, or 10 in a meeting?
Or take 10 together because they are basically covering the same subject.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
And find a synthesis of all of those and then bring this to the meeting.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And some of the proposals, we already have it in the bylaws. So I receive proposals. Maybe that person never read or maybe misunderstand the bylaws because I receive proposals that we already have.
Right. Before you bring this to the AGM, you have to put work into this, you know, discussing it with the people and consolidating
it. We need time. And for me, it's very rushed to present this all huge work in this meeting.
And that's, I think, the homeowner should help, because if we have a committee that takes those and tries to do this work and working with the people who made the proposals, they can then deliver something to you and to the AGM that's much easier to understand.
Are you proposing another committee?
Yeah.
No, we can't.
She doesn't have to be involved.
We can't. No.
In the 8 years I've been here, we've never had 50 items. We can barely get through two items, and it's already 8 hours. So I don't know who would show up to do 50.
Are they all bylaw changes or just?
No. Most of them
wouldn't have any legal ramification then.
Yes, they would, because they're in the bylaws. But
some of them are very logical, because right now we don't have fiber optic for 100% of the people, so we have a lot of antennas, including me. I'm breaking the law because I have an antenna here, because we need to update that law. It was created tons of years ago, so we had not the internet at that time. So, so it's just a...
Things live. They need to be updated over time. Things live. They need to be updated over time.
Yes,
the fact that we have 51 is just an indication that we have some backlog.
So, hold on. I do want to say something to that point really quickly, because I do think this is part of the problem in the neighborhood, and I'm going to talk about the elephant in the room, is that for me, myself, I love it here. I love being away from the bureaucratic BS that I have lived through in the U.S. I come here for so many reasons. One of them is how wonderful this community is, and we've been here 3.5 years, I would say. I'm really concerned that some of my fellow owners feel so taken back by the rules and regulations enough to put out there so many changes. Like, to me, there's another issue we're dealing with here.
Yes.
Because personally, I'm in favor of less. If it's not broken, then why are we even... I'd rather spend my time at the pool, at the beach, on the ATV, whatever, rather than us deal with all this stuff. And I think that's the underlying issue, is that in our community, I love it. I love the way it is. Yes, I agree at times there might be the need to change a few things, but broadly speaking, I moved here for what it is today. Mm-hmm. And it concerns me that there are so many proposals to change this, what I left behind. And so I don't want to debate the proposals, please. I don't mean to do that. All I'm saying is I think there's an underlying issue in the community where some of us might feel the way I do, and there may be others among us who feel completely differently. And that's the opposing issue that we're dealing with. Put the individual proposals aside. I think there is a separation in that particular point. I'm not meaning to be jerky by this. I'm just meaning to put it out there to say, I love it here.
I love you guys. I love to be here.
You don't even know.
This is just craziness. That's not my point. My point is, I hope that we can somehow find a way to meet in the middle, and enjoy what's around us. It would be miserable for me if every day I woke up and thought there were 50 things that are broken here.
Can I just do a little bit of clarity? In all fairness to Arianna and myself, there were 51 proposals. About 5 or 6 of them were all the same thing. There weren't 51 different proposals. So, when you say, all of us, 51 different, it's not. There could have been 5 homeowners maybe had the same proposal.
Pardon? I don't know that we had that. But anyways, I get your point. I understand your point.
Still,
I don't know how many we had last year. We probably had 5.
Yeah.
So 5 to 50, it is somewhere in between. So there is, as you said, there's a backlog of things to us to deal with. I'm just saying that
last year we had none, and 2 years ago we had just 3.
But look at all the new homeowners you have.
Who,
look at all the new homeowners that you have, and they've all voiced. They all have a right to voice. Yeah, yeah.
But again, I would say all of us, we have the bylaws. We know what the bylaws are.
Mm-hmm.
We all know what they are. We all knew what they were when we came here.
Mm-hmm. No, we didn't. I didn't. Did you get? I didn't get a copy.
And be at 80%, 90%. Okay, maybe 2 people have not, but we still have 106 homeowners here, right? So the majority of us, we bought in here knowing what we were buying into. And I'm grateful to be here in HPV. And I came in eyes wide open with what our bylaws are, how we operate, et cetera, et cetera. And I love that there's so many people here. So thank you, Rick, for taking the time to help
everyone. Thank you. Thank you, each one of you, really, for believing in this place. Appreciate it.
Huh?
I said I didn't know, but that doesn't matter.
Did you get
about the bylaws? I know that we were all supposed to get a copy of the bylaws. Us, for one, did not receive the bylaws when we got it. So one of the stipulations and one of the things we talked to Arianna about is I think it's mandated that the homeowner be given the bylaws and somehow sign off to say, yes, I received it. Yes, I understand.
Yes.
Because it's like a handbook.
Yep.
Everybody that we sold to directly.
Yeah.
I got it.
Signed before they closed.
We
got
them
all.
Nope.
All agreed.
What
happens is once it passes hands, it goes on to the notary, and something can be sold today, and we have no inkling, no idea, and the notary. I'm sorry, but the notary, the real estate agent. They're not motivated to, they're just want to do their job.
Yeah, they want
to
close.
Move on to the next one.
Yeah.
And we discussed this, Arianna, we discussed this about handing these out and making sure that the new homeowners, lot owners, whatever it is, make sure they sign that they receive them and understand.
By the way, Arianna dismissed me from the architectural committee.
Yeah, there again, I think it's a joint thing. I think even at the gate, at the guard gate, a real estate agent comes by with a prospective client. It's like, hey, here's the bylaws.
Yeah.
Sign here before you take that. You are aware that there are bylaws. Here are the bylaws.
Yeah, don't
there's different, but also, us as a buyer, it's like, don't check your brain in at the border,
Yeah.
You go down there, do your due diligence. It's like, hey, there's a, this looks like a condominium regime here. It looks like there must be an HOA if there's a Casa Club. How does that get paid? Who pays for it? I would think that as a buyer, I would like to think that I would ask.
Well, you'd think that, but a lot of us didn't.
Anyways, we're trying to solve one problem in particular.
Yeah. And thanks, yeah.
We understood the general, you know, but not.
Sure.
But it would be nice going forward, because if you don't know it and you don't, y'all never got one either. So.
Adi's pointing out that, you know, it is under, you know, Mexican law. You are married, whether you sign anything or not, just by the simple act of being an owner, you are automatically, irrevocably a member of the home.
It's just a question of knowing what's in there. I think that was
absolutely.
Well, we can probably do a better job of making the bylaws and things like that more regularly available and make sure they're up to date.
Well, if you go, you know, look in Haciendas Palo Verde, you know, on the website, you'll find the website and the bylaws are there. Go look at any other condominium regime and try to see if you can download the bylaws. We've been trying to be as open as we can about it. It's like, there's information.
They're not on the website. They're, if you look up Hacienda Palo Verde bylaws, you can pull up the PDF.
Okay.
But when I go to the website,
you
have to click on the word about.
I will clarify there. My son manages the website, and he is no longer, you know, the thing of. I think he pulled it down because there might be a lighter version of it.
Yes,
it's like, you know what?
Your
arm, you're just the other arm. your left arm, your bicep.
Turn that into a tattoo.
It's in your pocket. It's in your pocket. The pocket is.
It's on the tube of Baja.
Map of Baja.
Tattoo it on there. Gracias. I don't know what to do. Anyway, I don't have anything else. I mean, that's unless you guys got any more questions directly at me. I've tried to be as transparent. We did the best we could. We're humans. It's not perfect. The beauty of it is there's a mechanism to change it to whatever we want. It's up to us collectively to do that.
Just on behalf of the homeowners, I think you've done a good job of trying to make a great place for a lot of people.
Well, thank you.
Most of us are happy.
I feel very comfortable living here.
There's things we can do to make it better.
When I talk to other developers, it's like, you're not going to live in your own development, are you? It's like, that's the goal. You don't live. No, it's like, you know what? I'm good with it. So, anyway. You guys are all great neighbors, and it's a pleasure.
Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rick. That was good information. I learned a lot.